Thank you, Jill. That one misread on my bio was referring to economics rather than econometrics. I thought it gave me an occasion to tell you that my son, he's my third son, he's now just starting college, but when he was 8 years old, his response to "What does Daddy do?" was "Economistics." I want to acknowledge some support that we received from the Commonwealth Fund in a series of papers that we put together for them. I'll put them up in a minute. And my co-authors, Danielle Lloyd and Joe DeMore. In terms of myself, I've been sort of split between my duties as an academician at the University of Pennsylvania and also as something of a guiding force for research in the Premier Inc. World. I have, other than that, I have nothing to declare. Declare? Disclose. Declare is what you do at customs, right? Yeah. Okay, so here's a brief outline. Context, and of course the context is ACOs, and it actually just reminded me when Jill was referring to CCOs. I had that right, that's Coordinated Care Organization? Okay. Well, he should have, Elliot Fisher probably should have talked to you first, because Elliot Fisher regrets very much, apparently the term ACO came from him, Accountable Care Organization, and he basically has renounced it as a very unfortunate description of what goes on, particularly the word account, and which implies bean counting, which is not what it's all about. I want to talk a little bit about the collaboratives that Premier runs, and that's where all this began. Something called the Capabilities Framework, which I'll elaborate on as well. The environments in which these organizations found themselves in, which really determined in many ways their destiny and their approach, both external and internal. Impetus and motivation, you could say it's the ACA, but there are other things as well. Status. Are we done? Okay. Sort of interesting on implementation status. I wrote a brief article on the discoveries that we had from a collaborative we had, and I said that although these organizations were self-selected as on the path to developing an ACO, that not a lot of progress had been made, and that got picked up a lot by the press that somehow this was a exercise that was going to be doomed to fail, but I certainly don't believe that is true at all. Then I will get back to the four organizations that were the subject of this particular investigation, what lessons we learned from them, and then some future challenges. So, as I said, this particular presentation about the journeys to accountable care is the third in a series of papers that were underwritten by the Commonwealth Fund. And you can get access to all three of these papers and related materials by going to the Commonwealth Fund site, and we were certainly grateful for their financial support. I should say that in spite of what has been said in some context, we have seen a slowdown in healthcare spending, at least a slowdown in the rate of growth of healthcare spending, which has returned it to rates of growth that go back almost 50 years. So a lot of people are tend to associate that with, as an economist as I would, with the recessionary period that we've gone through. And certainly that's part of the story, no question about it. When the dollars aren't there, the belts get tighter and everybody cuts back. In fact, one of the bright spots of the labor sector had been traditionally healthcare. It no longer is. And that's, again, a consequence of what we're going through right now. So some of the things that have been anticipated and encouraged by the ACA are really taking hold. The other thing I want to say is that most of what I want to talk about is going to involve private sector payers, but of course, as you know, the government has a big role in this, CMS and its shared savings program with a couple hundred organizations, the Pioneer program, which has stumbled a little bit, but a couple of the organizations that I'll talk about today were part of that as well. That's from CMMI, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation. So let me set the stage here a little bit. This is, as you see, a map of the United States, and I've highlighted four organizations that I'm going to talk about in the context of this talk, but they are four among something like 67 organizations that were part of the collaborative, representing 86 markets, well over 300 hospitals, and 14,000 physicians. And as you can see from the color coding in this map, about 40 U.S. states had at least one organization that was moving in a deliberate way towards accountable care. So the ones that are up on this screen, Fairview is up in Minneapolis, Minnesota. AtlanticCare is in New Jersey, southern New Jersey. Memorial Health is the only public hospital in this group. And it's actually the fifth largest system in the country, so it's a very large public hospital. And then Presbyterian Hospital in Albuquerque, New Mexico, which is a strange kind of combination of factors. It's a place which has a very high poverty rate, but very low healthcare spending, at least as tracked by the Dartmouth Atlas. So we'll talk about that too. I made a mention to you about capabilities framework. So everything that we've been doing with this exercise has been in that framework. And I should acknowledge actually Rick Gelfillan, who was working on this project with us before he became a head of CMMI. But a bunch of very smart people were putting together a framework which would be essentially foundational for what is it that you need to take into consideration as you try to move from traditional care to accountable care. And what you see listed here are what you might call the six core components that underlie it all. And then there are capabilities above that, and then each capability has a set of operating activities. So, for example, we'll take the second one, patient-centered medical home. One of the capabilities associated with that core component is to optimize chronic, acute, and preventive care. And then there are operating activities that refer to things like registries and access and disease management and evidence-based care systems and so forth. So it's a whole hierarchy, which, again, I won't get into here, but it was laid out in the second paper that was listed in that list from the previous slide. The other ones you can see are pretty basic. Primary care, what we call patient-centered care, is really what that's about. About primary care-driven healthcare, which is patient-centered, the second one. Leadership, largely coming from physicians, even though these organizations were founded around hospitals, but still led by physicians. Clinically integrated network is obviously an important part of it. Population health and analytics, necessary to be able to guide where you're going and know where you've been. And probably the most challenging of all is aligned payer arrangements. And that's the way we defined in many ways whether or not you were seriously moving in that direction or not. So in this particular exercise where we were doing these case studies, we were trying to figure out what specifically was going on in certain organizations. We used an abbreviated capabilities framework in order to formulate questions that were based on what we had learned from that framework in a different setting. And there were three transformative elements that were the ones that we focused on: administrative, information technology, and clinical. The information that we got largely came from personnel interviews with medical and administrative leaders. We got information that was provided by health systems and data that was submitted to us as part of the implementation collaborative. PACT stands for Partnership for Care Transformation. We were actually trying to use a different term from ACO because of some of the bad press that was associated with ACO in the early years, or maybe still exists. And of course, publicly available data. The organizations, the four ones that I mentioned, differed not too much in ownership and in governance. They were all nonprofit. One was a public hospital. The other three were standard nonprofit hospitals. Three of them had physician health organizations, although only two of them were really active. Importantly, all had ownership in a health plan, in some cases, self-insured employee plan. So they all had, I would say, some skin in the game in terms of where we were going financially. The payer mixes varied, however, tremendously across these organizations. And, for example, Memorial Health Systems, MHS, and AtlantiCare were serving a larger number of safety net, and in fact, are categorized as safety net hospitals, as safety net or indigent payers, either supported by Medicaid or uninsured. But what was interesting is that even with the exception of Fairview, which is up in Minnesota, if you go to Albuquerque, New Mexico, where PHS is, Providence Health System, New Mexico has the distinction of being, I think, the state with the largest percentage of uninsured adults. A quarter of New Mexican residents are uninsured. So even there, we're dealing with a segment very much in need. In terms of healthcare utilization, that's something we all look at because it could be either an opportunity or a challenge. And what we found, again, was if you look at from the Dartmouth Atlas, the expenditures for the last 2 years of life, which is a good indicator of utilization levels, they had somewhat similar spending results, but in terms of where they were in resource usage, you can see like the first two I've listed there, Memorial Health System in Florida and AtlantiCare, both safety net hospitals, were at the 90th percentile in terms of rates. Even though their poverty rates, 14.7 and 13.6, was below the national poverty rate. In fact, the only hospital whose poverty rate was above the national poverty rate is Providence Health System, which is an interesting puzzle. What other factors were involved in moving accountable care? Well, we all know about the cost pressures. That was what motivated this discussion to begin with, that employers were pushing for slower growth in spending and so forth, shifting utilization and not to spend dollars more wisely or more effectively. They were incentives for early adoption. First movers, of course, can reap great benefits, but oftentimes also face great risk. So there was a double-edged sword there for more of them. And we'll see a variation across our organizations in that way. Uninsured individuals and employees, you know, it was a great burden. Here's a way to try to access that burden in a systematic way. Challenges, well, the biggest one was that local payers were not ready for value-based contracts, by and large. There was quite a bit of adversarial local market dynamics in terms of competition among physicians and between physicians, conflicts between physicians and health plans, which we ran into again and again when we were on site and talking about payer partnerships. State and federal regulations weren't designed to do this, but they really do interfere with storing, sharing, and using patient-related data. So the patient-centeredness and the need for data flow and data manipulation and information was a big obstacle. Not surprisingly, and we talk about this every day, the insufficient number of primary care providers. That's not surprising, given the rates at which they're compensated. And so we're now trying to move to a system that's trying to move toward primary care a little bit, perhaps as a substitute for specialty care. And that gets you to the next point. Many specialist providers were concerned about what would happen to them under accountable care, that they may have less business, so to speak. And finally, this is something that I hope I have a little time to talk about, and that is the ideal pacing is not clear. And there are two different forces at play here. One is if you move too slowly, you leave money on the table, so to speak. what we can call spillovers that are negative for you but positive for organizations that, that serve some of your own members. But there's also great risk in moving quickly, as anybody would know from being first mover. This slide is actually just to show you that the all four organizations, which are listed on the right-hand side, Atlanticare, Fairview, Memorial, and Presbyterian, are all well above what was attained in terms of implementation status by the readiness group that that collaborative that we ran. So, but you can see that it's sort of ordered with, not surprisingly, Fairview is the one that came closest to full implementation. The further out you go in this radar diagram, the higher up you are in implementation, as you can see from the labeling there, from 0% to 100%. So if Fairview was highest, next came Presbyterian, and then Atlanticare, and then at the bottom, Memorial. I'm sorry, Memorial, and then at the bottom, the readiness collaborative. Okay. The challenge that these organizations faced was balancing investments in care management and other infrastructure, okay, as you moved into a different mode of payment, reduction in revenue from reduced utilization of certain services, and then producing the need for new payment models. Fairview moved to value-based contracts with its payers quickly because they wanted to mitigate risk from straddling fee-for-service and value-based purchasing. So they moved quickly. And their mantra, as quoted there, was if you change care, financial reform will follow. And they had great faith in that. And they were successful. They were able to enter into these kinds of contracts with all five of the major payers in their region. Other organizations moved quite a bit slowly and really tested the waters with pilot studies. So I don't know if I'm going to have a chance to go through each of these. Those are the... How much time do I have left? It's about time to wrap up. Okay. So let me just say that each of these organizations, I'm sorry I'm not able to get into all of the detail. The relationship building with payers was for Fairview Medical Group was the big driver there, and health information exchange as to bring in independent physicians in as well as personal health records. The result of on care quality was a focus on transitions and reductions in readmission rates. And patient experience, although it was somewhat stagnant during the period of transition, picked up quite a bit post-transition. Cost of care better than the market average for 2012. And they earned shared savings on all of their commercial accounts, so that was pretty remarkable. Atlanticare, however, went the route of looking at a specialty care center as a pilot, about 1,500 covered lives, patients that were really at the high end of utilization with chronic conditions, and the idea was to see can you address these directly in a schema where the payer is paying out a monthly amount per head, so it's capitated, but the hospital, of course, is now bearing the risk in terms of making sure that these people get the care they need. And indeed, they did get the care they need in spades. Let me show you a diagram, which is a little faster for you to see. This is the sort of picture that you'd want to see for all organizations when accountable care is implemented. Yes, an increase in office visits, that's what you want, and everything else in the negative side, ED, admissions, length of stay, average cost per day, that kind of thing. Presbyterian had a long history of accepting risk, integrating delivery, so that's a somewhat complicated story, and I don't think I'm going to have time to go through it. But suffice it to say again that they were very successful in reducing demand for hospital services and at the same time improving preventive care. Memorial Health Services, as I mentioned, is a public hospital, and they concentrated on a contract with the state of Florida that was called the Children's Medical Services Network to partner and manage care for special needs children. And the bottom line on that, and I won't go through all the details of what they did, but they saved the Department of Health, according to Florida, $20 million over 3 years, caring for 4,000 children, and still showed improvements in the quality of care. Okay, so I'll have to wrap up there. Let me just get to the final slide, which is just the group of people who worked on this slide. So anyway, thank you for your attention.